once more unto the breach, dear friends, else close the wall up with our English dead. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and welcome to another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jake and
Jeff
McClure. Now, that may have been overly promissory. I always want to put a caveat on that. It is exciting to us because we might mess up in our audience of at least three people and embarrass ourselves greatly.
Why do you think there's three people listening to us?
Well, there's you and me, and there's at least two people at the board at the studio right now.
You're listening?
What did you say? I wasn't paying attention.
Are you listening?
What?
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, I see. No, maybe it's less than three people now that I do the math and realize that I'm not paying attention to. So it is going to be at least mildly not boring today as we discuss economics across the global system, the national system, and the state and local system.
We can do a little bit of interstellar economics discussion, too.
Yes. Galactic commerce this week picked up quite a bit as the dust rate inflated. It makes as much sense as most of economic jargon, huh?
Well, that and the UAPs. We apparently importing some UAPs and didn't know it.
UAP? Oh, that sounds horrible. You should write headlines. What's a UAP?
Unidentified aerial phenomena.
Oh, yeah.
There were 100. We apparently over the last several years have imported 137 of them.
How do you know it's not the same one over and over again?
It could be, but the Central Intelligence Agency, the director of Citrus, what's his name? What's the title?
I don't have the director of what?
Intelligence coordination or something like that.
I'm not sure.
Said there were 137 sightings.
Of something unknown and unidentifiable.
Unidentifiable aerial phenomena that they don't know what is.
What is amazing to me is that there's only that many of them, that they were able to identify all of the other stuff.
Well, there was initially 144, and they figured out that some of them were deflating weather balloons.
Wait a minute. I've heard that one before. Uh-huh.
Yeah, but so they actually eliminated some of the things they thought were
swamp gas deflating from weather balloons over Roswell.
Right, that's it.
Right.
And there were a bunch of men dressed all in black with little shiny things flashing. Yeah.
Yes, that's what's going on. We're going to put a call in to Will Smith and see if he can identify any of these things. All right, so that's not really what we're going to talk about today. We've already talked about it, so we're not going to talk about it. Well, maybe we will. This is about economics, and we do tend to talk about fun things like UAP. Why do we have to have a new acronym for UFO? That's an acronym itself.
Well, but it's cool. It's a UAP that tells you you're up to speed. You're not in 1950s.
Using the new acronym. It's like when the military changed its terminology for the alphabet. Right. Okay.
They changed the terminology for the alphabet? Oh, yeah, after World War II.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a long time ago.
You just have to give them new names. Why? Well, to confuse everyone. Obviously. Is that for intelligence purposes or anything? No, it's for lack of intelligence purposes. This is the government we're talking about.
Well, this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and we are not only a riveting radio program, and riveting is very painful, so you'll understand why we're riveting.
Yes, if you've ever riveted yourself, you will know that we are a very riveting talk program.
We're also, the couple of guys you hear, Jake and Jeff, are also the principals in a registered investment advisory firm in Salado, Texas, registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission, which implies in no way that they approve or disapprove of what we're doing.
Wait a minute. It doesn't imply that they approve of us, but almost by implication, if you ask the SEC if they approve of anything, they're going to say no. So that is disapproval. It immediately implies disapproval.
It's not active disapproval.
No, it's kind of like the word, I don't like that. The words, well, it sounds bad, but what you're really saying is that you don't prefer it. Not that you don't like it, but you don't like it when you see what I'm saying there.
I got you.
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah. So the SEC doesn't like us. There you go.
It's better simply to say that the SEC neither approves or disapproves of anything we say.
The SEC doesn't approve of what we say.
And since they haven't inspected us on this, what we're saying today, they haven't disapproved.
Yet. They might change their mind on that. So to be safe, we can say they don't approve of us. There you
go.
That's cool. Not that we're seeking approval, but we're really seeking not disapproval. How's that?
Also, even though we are registered, we're the principals of a registered investment advisory firm that gives wealth management to people with higher net worth, we are not giving investment advice on this radio program. We're educating instead, because investment advice is something that's given to people according to their specific situation, their goals, their objectives, and above all, it's private. And if we say it on the radio, it's not private.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
Yeah, we just established we didn't know what our listening audience is. It might be the best place to hold a private conversation if nobody's listening.
You got it. It's entirely possible. By the way, if you are listening and you want to contribute something to the show, or you want to ask us a question, you can send us an email at either jake@tpwc.com or jeff@tpwc.com, and we will respond on the air, Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.
Well, yeah. How do you know the Lord wills it, though? That's the thing, is that it's like the SEC.
Well, if the Lord doesn't will it, it ain't going to happen. That's the religious phenomena anyway.
The RP?
Yeah.
Okay. But the next thing is, I don't want to take your Deem one away, because you really like Deems.
I do. Deems and therefores and whereases.
We don't pay for this radio program. We've been doing this thing, or the radio program has existed under its current name, and at least one of the hosts, since 1997. Hasn't been paid for in that entire period, and they haven't cut us off. So obviously, this is not the electric company we're talking about. If you don't pay for 20-plus years, almost 25 years...
Is the electric company still running on PBS?
I sincerely doubt it.
So we are not the electric company then. Good. Right.
We don't pay for the radio program. They don't pay us to do the radio program, which is interesting in itself. We do actually buy advertisement on the radio station, though. That advertises the radio program. The radio studio also has advertisements for the radio program on there.
We have a wee tiny conflict of interest here, though.
What is it?
Fact that we're talking on the radio means people are listening to us and they hear the name, the person, Wealth Coach, and it's always possible they might decide to phone us up and say, look, I've got $5 million I want you to manage.
Right. But what we've discovered...
Hasn't happened recently, but you never can tell, it might.
What we've discovered is that most people that have very large amounts of wealth might hear about us because we have the radio program. But if you ever listened to our radio program, it's probably a good idea not to make a decision on where to put your large amounts of money just on the basis of a radio program.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
People make decisions on less valid information.
Yes.
And above all, the information we present on this educational radio program, educational, that is almost a promissory statement. Possibly educational radio program. The information we present has been obtained from sources we deem to be reliable, but we make no warranty or guarantee as to the accuracy or reliability of said sources.
You changed a word.
What
did I do? You said reliability instead of completeness.
Oh, or completeness.
Yeah. I'm surprised you are...
We make no warranty or guarantee as to the...
reliability of the verbiage of our disclosures.
We make no warranty or guarantee as to the completeness or accuracy of said information.
Right. Yeah.
There it is. Yes. There it is.
Yes. It's a very good... anyway, all right. So you want to tell us what happened this week in the market?
Well, the stock market recovered very nicely this week. For those of you with short memories, last Friday, the stock market went into a bit of a tizzy and actually fell some. And the news media, Wall Street Journal, Financial Times, and so on, reported it was because they were scared the Fed was going to tighten too soon, which is the reverse of what they were scared of a little earlier when they said the Fed might not tighten soon enough. The reality was the market probably fell on Friday, not because of any logical reason that we can understand, but because it was triple witching hour. And there were lots of witches running around on Wall Street towards the end of the day.
So that was Friday, last Friday, not this yesterday's Friday.
Yeah, last Friday. And so, because there were a lot of, actually three different levels of options expired on Friday, and that meant that people who had bet the market was going to go down, a lot of people had to sell shares to cover their options.
Yeah. Some of them were taking profits, and that's why they waited to the last minute to do it. But some of them were selling stuff because they didn't want to lose money.
So there were a lot of option-related sales going on Friday. Whenever you hear the term triple witching hour, that means the 90-day, the 30-day, and the 60-day. No, 90-day.
Quarterly, 30-day. So it happens on the quarter, but it's also stock options for indexes, and index futures are all coming on the same date. But on top of that, because it's quarterly, you also have the weekly, monthly, and quarterly contracts all coming due.
And they all come due at the same time, and it's called triple witching hour because there's an awful lot of selling has to go on, and sometimes there's a lot of buying has to go on, and the stock market goes crazy for no particular reason.
I think the person that developed the term for it was just like, let's get a really good term that sounds less boring than a lot of option, than a lot of contracts expiring, very detailed, lawyerly contracts expiring all at the same time. That doesn't sound scary. Triple witching hour. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's but good, still people don't know what it is, even though it has a cool name.
Term for it. Anyway, this market went down, and the people who looked around and said that doesn't make any sense for the market to go down with earnings coming in really well and the Federal Reserve getting... Actually, they blamed it on the Federal Reserve's announcement on Wednesday that the market went down on Friday, which didn't make any sense at all, but that's what the media does.
So we're still talking about a week ago, not last week, this, just to say what we recovered from.
This week, the S&P 500 closed at 4287.70. That's up 2.74% for the week.
Ooh, that's a nice return for a week.
And it's like up 13.97% year to date, which is pretty astonishing. Now, we're not quite 6 months into the year. Do not expect the S&P 500 to rise 27%.
For the rest of the year? Yeah.
For the total year. Despite the fact, and I'm going to give a really astonishing number here that's really weird. You realize that when the record close that we had on Friday, the S&P 500 was up, now get this, 91% from where it was at the bottom during the pandemic. A 91% rise. It's almost doubled. It was in the 2000 range at the bottom of the pandemic. It's almost doubled in just over a year.
Wow. That's impressive. That's really impressive.
And a lot of people bailed out when the market went down because that's why the market went down, because a lot of people bailed out. And some of them, I suspect, are still not in waiting for it to finally go down again.
Or, yeah, I'll buy it when it drops back down to where I sold it. Well, it might not for a long time, or if ever.
That's no promise. Shares may be higher or lower when sold than when bought. Past performance, no guarantee of future returns. Close cover before striking. Anyway.
What else happened this week?
Well, there was a agreement between President Biden and a bipartisan group of senators, and then the S&P 500 jumped, and as a result, both on Thursday and Friday, it hit record close levels.
Wait a minute. I have to stop you there for just a second. Did you just say, it sounded like you were talking about a really hard physics problem, like there may not be a real result here. You said bipartisan group of senators? I thought that didn't exist anymore. Is that even possible?
There's 100 senators, and 10% of them apparently are in a bipartisan group. There's about 11%.
11% of the senators are willing to listen to the other senators.
Apparently.
Apparently. Or at least they're willing to say that they're willing to listen. Yes.
So that kind of inspired investors. You could actually see the market on Thursday morning when the announcement came out. And then when the market opened, it jumped rather significantly. That was the only big thing. Otherwise, the market just rose steadily during the week as people realized that the world was not coming to an end and there were no triple witches on Wall Street.
Yeah. And we're going to tell you a bit about that infrastructure framework thing, doohickey. It's not really even a bill yet. It's just a framework for a bill that they've agreed on. So, and when you've only got 11 people agreeing out of 100, you may need more than that at some point. But it's hopeful in that they are the 11 people right in the middle that could swing the vote.
And, of course, immediately they fell to bickering again.
Of course.
We'll see how it works out. Anyway, we track another index, the CRSP Mid-Cap Value Index, which represents the kind of opposite corner from the large-cap growth side of the S&P 500 that drives it. It rose 3.42% for the week to 2449. Those of you who received the newsletter, I got one number wrong there. It was 2449.82, not 34. now up almost, it's up 19.39% for the year. Interestingly enough, things returned to normal this week. The stock market went up, and the NASDAQ went up more than the S&P 500, and the S&P 500 went up more than the Dow, which is normal, by the way. The Dow normally is the sluggard in the group. The S&P 500 is in second place and rises and falls. And the NASDAQ normally peaks out. And it reversed last week. The NASDAQ fell least. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell second least and fell most. And the S&P 500 fell in the middle, which just doesn't make any sense at all when you look at the way the stocks are structured. Anyway, do I say we're back to normal?
Yeah, go ahead. Except that having discussed this whole triple witching hour, we understand why that is, because a lot of witches were involved, but really a lot of those contracts were on the bigger name issues. Yeah.
Anyway, the 10-year U.S. Treasury note, which is the benchmark for the bond market, which is very important, by the way, if you're still thinking about refinancing your house, increased its yield to 1.528%. Now, that's nowhere near the high that it hit. It was up to almost to 1.7% earlier this year. But for 6 weeks, it's been declining, and it turned around and headed back in the other direction. Now, it's important to understand about bonds. And if you don't already know this, this is kind of basic, but I think most people don't know it. When interest rates rise, the value of a bond portfolio falls. When interest rates fall, the bond portfolio value rises. And a lot of people have been pumping money into bonds.
Let me give a quick... just a very quick primer on that. If you have money at a bank and a competing bank, and it's in a bank account that you don't use for any of your like normal purchases, it's just sitting there.
You only use it for abnormal purposes?
Abnormal purposes, like abnormal purchases. Yeah, exactly those things. You don't use it for like your electric payment. Your electric bill is not being paid automatic. There's no automatic payments coming out of it. It doesn't really matter if it's there or somewhere else. And you hear about a competing bank that's offering an additional 1% on your savings. Wow. Well, I'm going to switch. What does that do to the value of the existing bank's holdings? It made the value drop. They have less of it there because interest rates went up. Existing deals are worth less when new deals are worth more. That's the easiest way to think of it. If you've just been told... if you do this, you'll get a free ice cream cone, and you get all excited about it, and then you hear somebody else is getting two free ice cream cones, you probably want to go get that deal instead, which causes the one ice cream cone deal to be less valuable. When interest rates go up, bond prices go down, and ice cream cones as well.
When you throw ice cream cones in there, you're getting very complicated.
Well, it makes a mess when you throw ice cream cones anywhere. It's just really not a good thing to do, especially when you're doing a triple witching hour. Just
particularly in the summertime. In wintertime, it's not that big a deal.
It just stays frozen. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, the bond market increased its yield, so it went down as the stock market went up. And the stock market, now think about 2.74% for 1 week. Multiply that times 52. The stock market had a tremendous jump this week.
The 52 is the number of weeks in a year. People ask me, why do you keep multiplying by 52? Well, because it was a weekly. Sorry. Yep. It's not on the calendar that you have 52 weeks, so we have to remind people that.
But interestingly enough, despite the fact that the yield curve remains steep, the interest rates on the 30-year bond is a percentage drop more than they did on the 10-year bond, which flattens the yield curve just a little bit, but there's a reason that this happened, and that is apparently there was a rush of foreign investors who came in to buy 30-year bonds, 30-year treasury bonds, when they came to the conclusion this week that the Fed has inflation under control. Now remember, last week they were panicking because the Fed had lost control of inflation. This week they're buying because the Fed has inflation under control, which just shows that something that... one of my sons, not the one I'm speaking to, said to me the other day, he says he's grown up now because he's figured out that all the really smart people aren't really any smarter than he is. There aren't any real grown-ups out there.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. We at some point have to come to the realization that average intelligence is average because it covers everybody. Yeah.
Price of West Texas Intermediate crude oil, which is the benchmark for oil, which is another indicator of what the economy is doing, rose to $74. and it rose to $74, not on any constriction in supply, but on demand is ramping up across the economy as the economy reopens. Basically, the markets are telling us that the economy is doing well and it's likely to do better in the future.
I think that's a pretty good summation of the market.
But I will say this. It's important, as long as we're talking about markets. We are overdue for a correction. When the market has risen 91% from its bottom, when I say a correction, that doesn't mean a bear market. It just means that something, anything, could spook this market into a 10% drop.
Yeah. We don't think that that would be sustained. We don't think it would stay down for a great long period of time, because all of this other information that we're looking at is pretty amazingly good. Now, having said that we're due for a correction, I agree with that. Historically, we look back and say, hey, have we ever had a market rise this much without a correction in the middle of it? No, we haven't. But it's been an amazingly short-term period that had a pretty big drop at the beginning of it.
Yep, it did. But something
could go
wrong. It
was just over a year ago. So it's like we're compacting a bunch of history into a very short time period.
Something could flare up in the Middle East. Well, it's no longer officially called the Middle East now. It's Southwest Asia.
Well, we're going to change the term Midwest states as well. We're going to.
What are we going
to? I don't know. South, central middle.
State. Yeah. Yeah. Midwest is really weird because West is California.
It should be the opposite of the Middle East if it's the Midwest, right? But you got to figure out.
West of where?
Yeah, and that's the hard part is that I think we're still measuring from Greenwich in England.
That makes sense to me.
So, I mean,
that's the official time. Anyway, what was I talking about?
We were talking about anything could go off and cause a correction at this point.
The market is not, by most metrics, most historical metrics, the market is not overpriced, despite the fact it's risen so much.
Agreed.
The market is not underpriced. The market is fairly priced for a growing economy, but that doesn't mean that the traders might not get spooked by something. They're easily triggered into spook mode, which, by the way, is a very good sign. There's a lot of worry.
If there's a lot of worry, it means that the bull market has some more legs.
It's a centipede.
Yes. We're going to mix as many metaphors as we can. This bull is actually a centipede. Has more legs than an economist has hands.
It's a centibull.
Yeah, a centibull.
It's got legs.
All of the news that we're seeing on recovery from the economic collapse around the pandemic, in the United States at least, is good. There's still a lot of speed bumps for the recovery, and any of those speed bumps could cause us to look around and say, oh, the disaster is still here. The number one of those speed bumps that I see is the Delta variant of the virus of COVID-19.
Yep.
It is spreading rather rapidly amongst kids. It's not killing very many kids, but it's spreading amongst them and making them sick, which is making it easier for them to spread it to other people. As long as kids were sort of not getting it, then the adult population getting vaccinated stopped it a lot. It was like, you know, kids are below 20% of our population. But if you consider just kind of roughly round it to 20% of the population that kind of didn't need to be vaccinated before. So it's a lot easier to get to herd immunity when 20% of the population doesn't need to worry about it. The Delta variant is causing that to not be as easy. So a good place to look at is Israel for this. They are the most vaccinated country on the planet as far as percentage. It's helpful that their population is about the same as the Austin area. It's easy to get one group that size vaccinated, but they are back to mandatory mask wearing because the Delta variant is taking off so strongly and it's spreading amongst the kids so fast. So they're back to mandatory mask wearing in Israel, and that says something pretty clearly there. Israel's afraid of it, and they're the most vaccinated. We're starting to see a lot of the Delta show up here. So what's important here is if you can, please get vaccinated. This is the major speed bump to the economy getting moving again. And I don't care about how you feel and whether or not you're sick or not. Just don't slow down the economy, guys. Okay? No, I actually do care. I would rather you guys not get sick. That's there.
One of the things we tend to overlook is there still, right, last week we saw 374 deaths per day in the United States,
which
from
is
COVID.
Crazy low from what it had been.
Yeah, it was up in the, it was up around, let's see, the highest it got was like 3,637 a day.
Yeah, about the same as 9/11 every day.
But we still, it's not gone away. And we had one death in Bell County last week. We had four deaths the week before, four deaths the week before. It hasn't, the disease has not gone away. It's still lurking out there. It's still wandering around. And at least anecdotally, we're hearing that the people who are in the hospital dying from it right now or very, very ill from it right now tend to be younger people in their 30s and 40s. So it's a good idea to get in, is to get vaccinated. It's a good idea to continue to take some degree of precaution around people.
And as we said, when we talk about these other numbers, there's some amazing numbers out there on earnings and everything else, but they all go out the window if we go back to some kind of a lockdown. So regardless of what you feel the dangers around the vaccine to be, from my perspective, the danger of the virus to the economy for the unvaccinated is much larger. That's a macro approach. You know, they're saying there's secondary effects to the vaccine now. There's some myocarditis, which is an inflammation and enlarging of the heart, which is an unpleasant and pretty nasty experience. But it's extremely rare for those vaccinated. It's a lot rarer than the people that get COVID when they're not vaccinated. So that just kind of says you got to measure your risks. It's like getting in a car. You got to measure risks. How important is it to go to McDonald's today? People lose their lives in a car every day. I think for a lot of people, the risk on getting the French fries is outweighed by the taste of the French fry.
You got it. We could give some good news.
Let's do that.
Talking about.
Yeah, let's give some good news. We're going to lose all our listeners if we only talk about good news, though.
The Fed did their stress test. They announced the results this week. They actually go around and test the larger banks in the United States, and they give them a scenario, and they make them go through the scenario of the world comes to a semi-end or something, or the dollar crashes or the euro crashes, or something horrible happens, and would they be able to stand it? And all of the major banks, matter of fact, no bank failed the stress test. They all came out passing with flying colors.
Some of the pieces of the stress that they measure against is they look at the books and see what would happen if 20% or more of the loans outstanding didn't get paid back or went into arrears.
Yep.
So it's like a pretty stressful. Yeah.
Kind of like student loans.
Exactly like student loans, which is a nice little segue.
But anyway, it's good to know the banking system, the cause of the crash, the underlying, not the cause so much as the reason it was so severe, foundation of our financial system is the banking system. And if the banking system, that foundation is solid and can take a pretty major earthquake, and that's a good metaphor for what the Federal Reserve puts them through, then you can say with some degree of confidence that even if we did get a little something happen, like another shutdown, we at least would not have a banking collapse like we had in 2008 and 2009.
Right. The banks are in good shape. There's lots of cash in them. And that's the thing. When we're looking at, you know, people during the shutdown of the pandemic, they often, I would get messages about another global financial collapse, another banking collapse that nobody would know what their values were and so on. And that's typical to be afraid of the last collapse. It's like in war, we always train for the last war. And in economic collapses, we always prepare for the last one. Well, the global financial disaster, the collapse, there's lots of names for it. The Great Recession was predicated on a banking collapse. So the Federal Reserve and Congress and all of us got really strict on our banks to make sure that they weren't about to collapse. So they're not about to collapse, even in a difficult situation. Man, it could have been a lot worse if the pandemic had hit right at 2007. That would have been bad with two syllables.
Another little piece of good news in the passing of the stress test. The Federal Reserve cleared the six biggest U.S. banks to return more than $140 billion in dividends to shareholders.
Which sounds very dry, but what it's saying is that they didn't need to hang on to their profits just in case they're allowed to distribute it to the owners of the corporation.
But that $140 billion goes out as cash.
Yeah.
And the people who have that money, generally speaking, don't spend it on McDonald's.
Correct.
I don't know. You could probably buy a lot of McDonald's for $140 billion.
Yeah, that's a lot of French fries.
Or a lot of McDonald's stores. Anyway, it generally goes back into the market, which is a suggestion that the market probably will do better in the future. There's a lot of indications out there from a purely economic point of view that the market has a lot of room to move upward.
Yeah. We have a lot to talk about today. We actually haven't gotten any questions by email, but it's sort of okay this week because we have so much to talk about. When we come back, we're going to take a break here, but when we come back, we're going to talk about what's in the infrastructure bill that this bipartisan group of 11 senators and the president agreed upon. We're going to talk about other governmental issues, like what's going on with the student loans. What's the loss to the government for all the interest payments that aren't being made right now? And I'll talk about that in some more detail as well, because there's a lot of money out there in student loans, $1.6 trillion. We'll talk about that and what effect the government is feeling from not getting so many payments when it said, hey, you don't have to make your payment for a while. But if you'd like to join the conversation,
you're certainly welcome to give us an email message at either or both jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. That's 10gopakpowhiskeycharlie.com.
Or the personal wealth coach.
And we will answer on the air, Lord willing.
Unless it's obscene. And then we'll answer off the air. We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. Back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, Jake and Jeff McClure. So I said I was going to talk about what's in the bipartisan infrastructure framework. All right, so the White House and about 10 Senate Democrat and Republican members. So when it says about 10, and earlier in the radio program, Elder Baldy said 11. We actually don't know how many senators were involved in this. We think it's around 10 or 11. Yeah, this is Washington. Welcome. What is it that we're talking about here? This concept, infrastructure, this is roads, bridges, dams, broadband, public transit, railroads, the stuff that connects our communities and allows commerce, it allows us to buy and sell from each other, airports, ports, waterways. All of this stuff is important if we want to grow as an economy. The Obama administration, the Bush administration, the Trump administration, and now the Biden administration have all agreed on this point that we need it. Even though everybody agrees we need it, we haven't all agreed on what exactly we need in it. So it comes forward to this point, which is a really good time to make some investments. We've said in the newsletter that there are big issues with infrastructure. I mean, there's bridges now, a bridge across the Mississippi River, a major transit point that has been shut down, and it's continuing to cost massive amounts of money, not to the government, though indirectly in tax later, but in profits to companies that need stuff shipped, that need stuff to get from one place to another. So this really is a bipartisan subject. They still exist, folks. There are things that we can all agree on, and having a good set of roads to get our stuff around and ourselves around, and a good set of airports and a good set of railroads and clean water to drink just because you're not in a third world country. Those are all pretty important issues for an economic anything. If you want to have any kind of growth, then you need this stuff. We all agree on it. The original plan that President Biden had put forth looked a lot like some of the preliminary work that the Trump administration did on the same subject, including adding lots of funding for health care of the elderly and child care centers. So they shared this. The Republican Senate doesn't like the concept of putting health care in infrastructure. So the Trump and the Biden administration don't have a whole lot that they can agree on, but sometimes their arguments with the Senate might fit into something they can agree on. So what's in this new one if it doesn't have all that stuff that people were arguing about? Well, first off, it is the largest amount of money dedicated to bridges since the construction of the interstate highway system, specifically to bridges. There's been a lot of highway funds allocated as well. And let me kind of give you a brief outline. This is from the White House, but it's the packet that the senators were talking about at the White House. Transportation in infrastructure, in infrastructure, this section of it is about $312 billion. Now, this is something else that confuses economists as well as everybody else. The government does their accounting very differently than normal people. The cost associated with something is not the check that you pay for it. So when you're talking about buying a house, you'd say this is a $350,000 cost. I'm purchasing that. That's not how the government looks at it. They look at what additional expenses the house will have over the coming 5, 8, 10, 13 years, just random numbers in the future. And they say, what are the additional expenses associated with owning this house? We're going to have property taxes. We're going to have electric utilities. We're going to have water utilities. They include that in all their budgets, which is why you can get multiple price tags on this overall bill. You'll see some publications, some reputable publications saying this is a $1 trillion infrastructure plan. You'll see equally reputable places saying it's $1.2 trillion. The difference is whether you're measuring out 5 years or 8 years. And it's really hard to measure the benefits because the benefits come in extra tax revenue because of extra economic growth. That's really hard to estimate. It's even hard to guesstimate, especially when you try to add the way the government does. So we're going to be using the 5-year numbers rather than the 8-year numbers, just to kind of give you guys an idea that we understand this stuff a little bit, not greatly, because it's the government and nobody can understand the government. Okay. So roads, bridges, and major projects account for about $109 billion of this, about 10% of the total. Airports, about $25 billion. Water infrastructure is $55 billion. What is that stuff? What does that mean? Well, that's dams. It's reservoirs of all type, including water towers and that sort of thing. Important things to maintain flow of commerce. And just to give an example, we talk about broadband infrastructure in here being $65 billion, but this water infrastructure being $55 billion. These are both really big numbers. Well, we've talked over the past several weeks about changes in factory construction. For instance, in the desert states of Arizona and Nevada, you're getting chip manufacturers from overseas. Taiwan's largest chip manufacturer is building plants in Arizona, which sounds great. And how about like a cloud server farm out in the desert? That's great too, except they need water. So in order to have this kind of expansion, this is one of those weird things about deserts is that they don't generally have a lot of water in them. So we got to get the water out. I know.
You consider that weird?
It's strange. I know. And it's a piece of unknown stuff. We're trying to just educate as many people as possible that deserts generally don't have much in the way of water.
That's an unknown Terran phenomena.
Yes. Unknown Terran phenomena. It's a UTP. Yes.
Yeah.
Which is better than a UTI any day of the week. So getting water to the right places so that we can take advantage of low-cost land and lower expense manpower, human power, to actually get out and work in these factories means you got to go to places that aren't major hubs of other things because they're already being paid well in those major hubs. So that means we got to build the infrastructure out there. And what this does is purely capitalism raising the well-being of everybody involved, so long as we have good laws in place to protect workers and so on. That's kind of a vital thing. But having said that, getting new jobs out to rural communities is pretty important if we want to maintain growth. We shouldn't have the urban folks doing really well and the rural folks doing really poorly. We need to spread it out as evenly as we can, give the same kind of opportunity for economic growth across the board. Another big thing in here is electric vehicle infrastructure. So charging stations are a thing that are pretty important. And if you go back in time, there we go. We're going back in time to when internal combustion was new. Filling stations needed help from the government to be out there because there weren't that many of them, which made people think that they weren't that big a deal, which made them think that they didn't want to invest in them. Soon as the government stepped in and started pushing the infrastructure, pushing roadways out there, making available loans for spending on filling stations, it caused the internal combustion to do much better than it would have without filling stations. That I think is an understatement. Without filling stations, it would be very difficult to drive your car around for any length of time. So the government's getting involved in electric vehicle infrastructure. There have been a series of major reviewers of the automobile industries, like really major, like across the board. They're the ones that do safety inspections. They're the ones that you turn to find the value of your vehicle. Lots of them have said that in 10 years, probably half of all new cars will be electric. That won't work well if we don't have charging stations. I mean, it's great that you can make your batteries better and better, and it's great that it's less expensive long-term at this point to have an electric vehicle than an internal combustion vehicle. But if you can't fill your battery up when you're driving, it's not going to help you a bit that it's less expensive long-term. So building this infrastructure is important so that we can bring down cost of transportation, that we can bring down cost of shipping and lots of other stuff involved here. So that's a big deal. And the president wanted to get 50,000 charging stations out there. President Trump, in his first election campaign, had said something along those lines too, that he really wanted to see electric vehicle charging stations out there. He later went back on that. And so it's just infrastructure in general is a big deal. When we're looking at this bill, I don't see a lot of controversy in it. It's not even a bill yet. It's an infrastructure. It's a framework for the bill. There's nothing in it that I can point out and say somebody's going to say this is not infrastructure. This is pretty clear. They've also agreed on some of the steps to help pay for it. So this is another one of the things that I've heard a lot of concern about, where people are terrified that taxes are going to go up to pay for infrastructure. That's probably tax revenue will come up when the infrastructure gets better. But one of the top listed method of paying for this is five words: reduce the IRS tax gap.
Yep.
There are a lot of people that are paying a lot less money than they should be. And that's normal. We've been downsizing the IRS. It's not something I personally complain about. But if we want revenue to the government, you've got to actually pay the people that collect the taxes.
I read an article this week that suggested that there was about $1 trillion of uncollected taxes out there that could be collected by the IRS.
Yeah, and that by itself would pay for the infrastructure bill.
$1 trillion here, $1 trillion there, and you're talking about some real money pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's $1 trillion. I don't know why they're nickel and diming us.
Ugh. And I personally see enough activity that goes on that is hiding money from the IRS that I think that's probably a pretty good number.
Yeah. Even if it's just anecdotal pieces of information that we catch here and there about people taking cash or so on, that's, we see enough of it to say there's a lot of money that's not going to the government that should. And we don't want to become a nation like Greece where it's normal not to pay your taxes. I think most people agree we need to pay taxes. Just
one of the things
fair
that's
ones.
It's in the infrastructure agreement, at least as released by the White House. But I think it's very, very important. Is it called resilience? $47 billion.
Yeah.
Basically, setting up a situation where the least strong link collapsing doesn't take the whole thing down. And like we saw in the winter here in Texas, and we're almost saw this spring as the temperatures heated up.
Yeah.
As they warned us that we were going to get blackouts or brownouts if we didn't start turning up our air conditioners here in the spring.
Exactly. So resilience, weatherized stuff, including bridges and dams. We've got some old stuff that needs to be fixed up, and it's good for the economy to be doing it even while it's being done. It's really good for the economy once it's done. So that's kind of a... Don't expect to see a big boom in the economy in the next year or so. This is one of the problems with the infrastructure bills in general, is that they generally take 5 to 8 years for the impact of what they've done to raise tax revenue, which is, if you think of 8 years, that's well beyond two terms as the president.
And it's just like investing. If you're a true investor, you're a long-term investor, and you invest now, not for what you're going to get tomorrow or next week or next month. You invest for 5 to 10 years minimum. 10 years is more like it, so that you invest your money today expecting to have more money in 10 years. No guarantees. There's no guarantees with the government either, but that's a good investment, particularly when you're investing in hard assets like the government does.
We're about out of time for this hour. Next hour, we got lots of stuff to talk about. We're going to talk about retail sales and consumer spending. Wait, that sounds like the same thing. It is, but it's different numbers. We'll talk about...
It's the same thing, but it's different.
Yeah, exactly. Federal student loan stuff, lots of other stuff. But in the meantime, if you want to talk to us off the air, we actually do give fiduciary investment advice to individuals, trusts, foundations, folks of high net worth. You can call us locally with voicemail on the weekend, real live people on the weeks.
254-947-1111.
Or you can reach that line toll-free, 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can sign up for our newsletter. You can listen to the radio program going back lots of years. You can find our podcast. You can contact us through the contact form, or you can email us directly at jake@tpwc.com or jeff@tpwc.com. Until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.